from KQED. From KQED Public Radio, good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Penny Nelson in for Mina Kim. Yesterday, the White House announced it would expel 35 Russian diplomats from the U.S., including envoys from San Francisco's Russian consulate, over alleged Russian interference in the U.S. presidential election. Russian President Vladimir Putin said today that Moscow will not expel Americans in response. We'll discuss the Obama administration's actions and what they could mean for President-elect Donald Trump's Russia policy. Then at 9:30, we'll debunk some common myths about California's drought and water in the West with environmental reporter John Fleck. That's all coming up next on Forum. From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Penny Nelson in for Mina Kim. In a dramatic response to alleged Russian interference in the U.S. presidential election, the Obama administration yesterday expelled 35 Russian diplomats from the Washington, D.C. embassy and the consulate in San Francisco. The U.S. will also close two Russian intelligence gathering compounds. Despite recommendations from his foreign minister, Russian President Vladimir Putin announced today that he would not retaliate in kind. Russia continues to reject the allegations of hacking. In this half hour, we discuss escalating U.S. and Russia relations with the New York Times' David Sanger. David, welcome to Forum.
Good to be with you, Penny.
Well, of the 35 diplomats being expelled, do you have any idea what the numbers out of San Francisco and the Bay Area are?
I don't know if there are any.
Oh.
Right. They've given no breakdown. Just given where Russian diplomats tend to be centered, they're going to be vastly more in Washington and New York than there will be in California, where they're largely at the consulate, although there are many other Russians who may be operating under different non-diplomatic covers who could well be particularly in Silicon Valley.
Well, our hearing was that our understanding was that there would be diplomats out of the Bay Area. So it's called an unknown number, a quote unquote unknown number. So I didn't know if you had more intelligence.
Yeah, I don't have a full sense of how what the numbers the Russians have in the consulate there.
Right. Do you have a sense? So with whatever numbers there might be, the connection to the Bay Area, would they be being expelled from the San Francisco consulate, perhaps because of the connection to the Silicon Valley? Is there a particular reason why this area would be a target?
No, I mean, it probably has to do more with the activities of individuals who they're picking out. Now, the Russians, like the Chinese, have often used their consulates in San Francisco as a way to go try to figure out both first the defense industries and then more of our modern technology industries. But, to a great degree, the expulsion of the diplomats, while it fits an old Cold War meme that seems comfortable with us, is probably the least interesting part of what President Obama did yesterday. The most interesting part is that he named the GRU, the military intelligence, huge military intelligence unit of the Russian military, and then named four individuals, including the GRU's chief, and put individual sanctions on them. Now, these are not people who are likely to be coming to take their kids to Disneyland for vacation. So I'm not sure how much real effect it will have on them, and I doubt they keep much money in the United States, if any. But that took the cyber element of this and tried to personify it in a group of Russian officers who the Obama administration was basically making the case were responsible for the election hacking.
And what will doing the sanctions? So, first of all, let's start with who will support the sanctions and what impact they will actually have, even in this short period of time before the Trump presidency takes hold.
largely symbolic. I mean, this was not a sanction set. To make sanctions work, they have to be global, right? You can't say you can't put your money in the United States and then somebody picks it up and moves it to Singapore or Geneva or someplace like that. So
By naming these GRU individuals, is he making a statement that people already didn't know?
He is, in many ways, because you have his successor coming in doubting it was the Russians at all. This takes it back to some specific Russians who the current administration, outgoing administration, is charging were in the direct line of command here. And it puts President-elect Trump in an interesting box because he would have to decide whether to countermand these sanctions, basically lift them, on January 21st.
And on individuals.
And my guess is with his own party deeply suspicious of Putin and Putin's motives, that'd be pretty tough.
Going back, and I know you're saying it's largely symbolic, but going back to this move of expelling the diplomats, is there, from D.C., whether they're in San Francisco or not, what kind of loss is something like that to Russia in the first place? I mean, what are they overtly or even covertly doing? And is there any loss in any case to Russia by expelling these folks?
It's a disruption of their activities. It's a temporary one. Others will come to replace them. We've been through this many times before. I think in the George W. Bush administration, there was an expulsion of 100. We've seen this, and it could, I think, be a temporary setback, but only temporary. And I don't think anybody expects it to be any longer. I mean, we've been expelling diplomats, and they've been expelling diplomats for as long as we've had diplomats.
Okay, so out of all of this story that broke yesterday, the real news is in the naming of the four individuals and what that position, what position President-elect Donald Trump is in following that.
That's right. And then I think one other element, which is an effort by President Obama to create some norms of behavior in the cyber world. So there are all kinds of hacking, as we have learned well this year. So think about the Chinese getting the records of 22 million Americans that they stole from OPM, the Office of Personnel Management. These are not just names, addresses, and Social Security numbers. They are health and medical records, their banking records, their accounts of your relationships. It's what people need to file in order to get a security clearance. That was a far larger theft of data, but the Chinese stole it for surveillance, for their own espionage purposes. They did not publish it. What made this hack different was that the material was stolen and then published with an intention to somehow affect a series of outside events in the United States. And I think that's the norm that the president is trying to move against. He's not trying to stop espionage. We do that. They do that. It does raise the question, what other things get normed out if considered illegitimate? Would the rest of the world consider the Stuxnet attack, the Olympic Games attack that the United States and Israel did against Iran's nuclear facilities, which literally blew up equipment, to be an out-of-bound cyber attack, or is that an inbound cyber attack? You can ask this about a number of different areas in which cyber is used.
We're talking this hour or this half hour about the move yesterday by President Obama to expel Russian diplomats, 35 of them, from the U.S. and also to place sanctions on members of the GRU. Is that the correct way to say that?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And with David Sanger of The New York Times. And because we have a half hour segment, I'm going to put the phone number out there a little bit early. It's 866-733-6786 if you want to join in the conversation. Once again, 866-733-6786. And you can also email us at forum@kqed.org. Well, David, So moving over to this as sort of a setting the bar and making a precedent, stating a precedent kind of on how we're going to handle cyber attacks, what do you think China is going to do with regards to these sanctions? I mean, they've been in some way, you know, along with the rest of the world, keeping pace with the cyber attacks. Are they watching, and do you think that they are taking note?
Well, I think one thing that we've all learned about this, if we were having this conversation a year ago, it would have been largely about China. It's theft of intellectual property. It's targeting of Silicon Valley. It's efforts to steal military and industrial secrets. What the Chinese don't tend to do is try to mess around in the internal politics of a country using their cyber means. The Russians do a bit of standard surveillance, of course, and we've seen cases of that over the years, but they're much more interested in the information operations that really go back to the 40s and are built into Russian military and political doctrine. And that we saw with the leakage of the data, with the spread of fake news, techniques the Russians have used for years in Europe, that they've used against the former Soviet states. And the surprise here was that they were using it against us and that we were this wide open.
That wide open. I think that's the big thing. And also, it's a bit of a psychological jujitsu. I mean, it's like messing with our collective minds, messing with our national mind, that you are that easily kind of not toppled, but you're that easily manipulated.
Well, that's the wonder of, you know, the wonder of modern technology, because in the old days, if you were doing information operations, you would have planted false stories in newspapers or things like that. That is not what's happening today. Once you can get something to go viral, it can have a much broader pickup effect and echo effect than it ever could have in the old, you know, Gutenberg days of trying to spread this kind of information. And I think that's what we've sort of begun to get our minds around. When we did our big investigation that got published 2 weeks ago or so, and Times readers in your listenership may well remember this, it was a 7,000-word examination of the Russian hack. What surprised us was first that the FBI picked up on it so early. That was fall of 2015. And secondly, that the government's reaction to it and the DNC's reaction to it was so slow. And so the Russians have learned how to move at a speed that we're not accustomed to moving in responding to this.
Do you think in some part, you know, President Obama has been noted for being very cautious and very, you know, very thoughtful in his responses. Do you think in part a lot of this has been very measured, a response of being very measured, and perhaps, you know, it's allowed for an opening, as we said earlier?
Cautious and measured is usually good, and I think in this case it's particularly good because we don't understand what cyber escalation looks like. We understand it in nuclear, we understand it in traditional warfare, or at least we understand it better. We don't really have an understanding of it in the world of cyber. But the question is, did he act quickly enough? Had he done these same steps before the election? Had he done it in the summer when it would appear less political than intervening in, say, September or October? Had he done it soon after the FBI got its first indications in 2015, which is before the White House even was aware this was going on, would it have made a difference?
Mm. Let's go to Gloria and bring her into the conversation. She's calling from Berkeley. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, good morning. First, I want to thank Mr. Sanger and the Times for your reporting. We need the Fourth Estate to save our democracy. Here's my question.
Thank you.
I've heard some commentators edge up to this question, but it's the largest one I have. Do you think there is any chance that Putin and Trump colluded directly or through their surrogates to accomplish this outcome, and how can we find that out?
Thanks, Gloria.
Well, we've spent a lot of time trying to look at economic links, diplomatic links, private links, and so forth, back and forth. And so far, you know, you've seen some of the results of people who've gone back and forth. We haven't found much evidence that would suggest a direct collusion. there is clearly a direct confluence of interests here, because Vladimir Putin figured out at some point that what President-elect Trump was talking about, beginning to back away from the NATO alliance if they don't pay up enough, at a moment that Putin is trying to undercut the NATO alliance, talking about lifting sanctions on Ukraine, something that Putin has wanted for many years, made it pretty clear to Putin that he had a better chance with Donald Trump than he probably did with Hillary Clinton, with whom he's had many past clashes. It didn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. Now, the question is, does that last? Or at some point, does Mr. Trump come to the conclusion that he's been double-crossed in some way, or something has occurred that makes him doubt whether or not he's being dealt with honestly by Vladimir Putin? And, of course, that's been the experience of a few past presidents.
Right. And I would think that the larger picture, though, for the new administration, for the Trump administration, would loom large, that it's beyond Russia. I mean, that this is a new world that we live in, and cyber attacks will not just come from one front. They'll be coming from all sides. If it's tolerated on one side, it'll be coming from the other.
That's right. I mean, we talk about the cyber attacks as if the problem was the technology. And President-elect Trump talked about the difficulties of computer technology in some conversation with reporters the night before last. But the problem here isn't the technology. The technology is simply speeding the wildfire. The problem is how a wildfire is being set.
We've got some questions coming in online. Teresa's asking, are the actions of President Obama just too little too late? Was there sufficient intelligence prior to the presidential election to warrant taking these actions? So not from this point, but before the election took place.
Well, certainly on October 7th, the U.S. intelligence community turned out a statement saying that they had sufficient evidence to believe that the Russian government, with the likely knowledge of the highest levels of the Kremlin, lead Putin, were responsible for the attacks into political organizations. That would have included the DNC, the DCCC, and so forth. Now, one question I think that your listener could well ask is, if they reached that conclusion on October 7th, why did we wait until the end of December to respond? And there are many in the White House staff and many on the Clinton campaign or veterans of the Clinton campaign who are now asking the same question. I would backdate it more than that. I would take it back to the FBI investigation of last year and early this year and ask the question that maybe in June, when it was clear how the degree to which the DNC got cleaned out, that at that moment, President Obama should have begun to go public on this.
Another listener is commenting from the other side, saying, I believe Barack Obama made a big mistake by taking this drastic action, as it only increases the tensions with Russia. It was a failure of the American security agencies that should have been prevented and prevented these kinds of computer attacks. One must conclude that besides Russia, many other countries are able to hack as well and in far more dangerous ways than interfering with the election. And let's go back to the callers. We've got, Max in Berkeley. Max in Berkeley, are you with us?
Yeah, hi.
Hi there.
I have a question for your guest on how he thinks this might affect Russian Americans living and just Russian immigrants living in the United States, and how all this news might bring up situations in which even hatred or just
targeting.
Disdain.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Targeting.
Sure. Thanks, Max. Mm-hmm. David?
Well, Max, it's a very good question. It's always a risk. You don't hear as much about that right now the way you do and the concerns that you had from many Arab Americans, immigrants from Arab states and so forth, who were worried about exactly the same thing based on what Mr. Trump was saying about immigration, about building a wall, about rounding up and sending back illegal immigrants and so forth. So while I think there's a concern about it, I don't think we're back to Red Scare days.
Max, are you Russian?
Yes, I am.
Are you? Have you experienced any hostility?
No, just jokes from friends and other people.
Right, right. All right, well, stay strong. Thanks, Max.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. And let's go to Nancy. Let's go to Nancy in Dover, Kentucky. Hi, Nancy.
Hello. I'm wondering why Edward Snowden's name hasn't come up. I mean, he's in Russia. He's a computer guy. Is he at all suspected of being
on
the hacking?
Good question. David Sanger?
No evidence that he has. He's pretty heavily watched. I'm not sure the Russians would trust him.
Who's watching him? When you say he's heavily watched, who's watching him?
Well, the Russians are watching him.
Russians?
The Russians are watching him really closely, and we're watching him really closely. Huh. So, of all the people who you would suspect, I would put him pretty low on the list. On top of which, let's remember that the groups we're discussing here that are believed to be at the center of this, the FSB, which is the successor to the old KGB, and the GRU, which is the military intelligence unit, are not exactly new to the scene. These are the same groups that have been doing espionage in America for years. And in the case of the GRU's hacking group, some people call Fancy Bear, others call APT for Advanced Persistent Threat 28. These are the same groups that went into the State Department, the White House, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, think tanks around the United States. So a lot of that activity predated the whole Snowden affair.
You know, I have to say, okay, so I want to bring up what President Putin said in response to the expelling of the diplomats. He invited the children of diplomats in Russia to come admire the Christmas tree at the Kremlin, and I felt like that was just such a smack. What did you think of that? We have just a minute left, so
it was pretty brilliant. It was. I'm going to ignore what President Obama is doing. I'm going to keep my head down and pour mulled cider for small children between now and January 20th, and then I'm going to deal with the next guy.
All right. Well, David Sanger, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
David Sanger is a national security correspondent for The New York Times and author of Confront and Conceal, Obama's Secret Wars and Surprising Use of American Power. Well, we're going to talk next half hour about water in California and in the Southwest and just debunk some of the myths around that. Stay with us. We've got a lot more to come and talking a lot about some of the stuff that's going on that's not so good. And then in 10 o'clock hour, we're going to talk about some of the stuff we're looking forward to in 2017. I'm Penny Nelson, in for Mina Kim. You're listening to Forum on KQED.